Earth explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. This week, our guest almost needs no introduction, except that she is now researching in a new area. Heralded worldwide as one of the best dolphin and whale communicators and researchers on Earth, she has now raised the bar on research into Sasquatch. She is working with a family of around 300 in an undisclosed area and has learned of their belief system, the methods in which they communicate, and even made friends with a number of the community members. We'll cover this and much more with our guest, Joan Ocean. Welcome to the program, Joan.
Hello, glad to be here.
Oh, I have heard so much about you. I was recently in Hawaii with our mutual friends, Michael Sala and Angelica Whitecliff, and I had a beautiful experience swimming with the dolphins. I was amazed at the organization of groups that facilitate people swimming with dolphins, but I understand it wasn't always that way. How did you start the worldwide attraction to swimming with the Hawaii dolphins?
Well, it really is unusual because I didn't even know how to swim. I actually am a counseling psychologist, and that was the work I was doing. I was counseling people, and I did live on Oahu. But at one point while I was meditating, this message came in, and it was like very loving. It felt just so wonderful, you know. And they said, I heard this. You experience it as a voice or a feeling that says, we would like to work with you if you are interested, because on your planet, the energies, the technological advances have gone beyond the energies of love and caring and compassion. And we would like to work with you to bring that back into balance, because we are balancers. We balance everything. And then they said, these are the energies of the dolphins and whales. Well, I was so taken by surprise, because I didn't even know exactly who they were. I mean, I had even missed Flipper and everything. You know, I didn't really know. And people at that time, I mean, this was back in the early 80s, so people were receiving, like, messages, you know, and they were channeling, and there was the ascended masters and amazing people coming through. And I thought, oh no, I got dolphins, you know, so aren't they fish or something like that? So I didn't really tell anyone for quite a while. And then it just happened. I was working in a clinic, actually an abortion clinic, as a counselor for the women going through this very difficult procedure. And a friend said, would you like to go on a trip with me? I'm going to spend a month off British Columbia to be with dolphins and whales, and we just can live in a tent. And, oh, that sounded so good to me, just to get away. You know, I didn't care for what reason, just to be out in nature for a month and take a break from the work I was doing. So that's what I did. And then I met them in person, the dolphins and whales, and the people who were on that trip were very interested in the message I'd received. So they asked to put it in their newsletter. They had a monthly newspaper they put out, and I gave them permission. The entire message is in my book. And all of a sudden, I received so many phone calls and mail. There wasn't email yet at that time, from people all over saying, I just knew that the dolphins were trying to communicate with us. So that gave me more confidence to talk about it. Yeah.
So this telepathic communication, it came to you, you know, in English in plain sentences, or was it just a feeling that came to you? And did they identify themselves as dolphins?
Well, just at the end, after, you know, I was immersed in their frequency, you know, in their vibration, which felt very good.
Right.
And I just thought, well, this is part of the meditation I'm doing. But then the information came in, and, you know, it does feel like words. It feels like you're being told exactly, because I wrote down exactly what I received. And, you know, and yet now it seems when I'm interacting with them, it's more cellular. It's like from the physical cells of their body, the intelligence in their cells, you know, bringing, sending intelligence directly into my cells. So this experience in a meditation was a little different, and it was helpful because many people now ask me, well, can you still be with dolphins when you don't live near the ocean? And of course you can. So this came in and with visuals, kind of, you know, a picture of me swimming, and I thought, well, this is so silly because I never learned how to swim and I'm afraid of the ocean, and that was my last name, even though that my name has always been Ocean, but I never really went near the ocean. So
did the dolphins sort of help you get used to swimming in the sea? Because I notice in your on your website you don't have a wetsuit on or floaties or. You know, it's like some people that can't swim, they go out there with flotation devices. You're under the water, holding your breath, swimming with a mask on.
Well, I did start with the life jacket and the boogie board to start with. And it was just then soon after that it was my birthday, and I thought, well, what do I want to do for my birthday? And I decided to fly over to the Big Island because an environmentalist friend of mine said, there's lots of dolphins. You should go see them. So I just said, okay, you know, I'll get a life jacket. And I flew over early in the morning when it was still dark. I went down to the shore and looked out, and there were the dolphins. And I had this this just desire to be with them, you know, to learn more about them. And so I wasn't really afraid of the water, so long as I had something to hold on to. So I went paddling out there, and, of course, you know, they were swimming in circles, and they swim much faster than I could. So every time they would circle by, I'd get to swim alongside them for just a short while, and then off they'd go again, and I would just kind of tread water and wait, and soon they'd come back again. And I spent at least 5 hours out there until I was so cold and shaking and, you know, had to come in. And then after that, when I went back and told my clients about it, the people I counsel who are often my good friends as time goes on too, they said, well, can we do that? And I said, well, I don't know. Do you know how to swim? You know, and then I realized, well, I didn't know how to swim either. So finally they all got together, and we came back to the Big Island and rented a house and went out to see the dolphins for a week. And then the next group asked if they could come with me, and another group. And that was really how it began. It was never my plan or intention to do that. It's interesting because I think often that happens. You know, we have our guidance or our higher selves. Something seems to know better than we do what's more fun in life and how to guide us, because everything in my life seems to have come that way kind of by surprise to me, you know.
Sounds like a wonderful life. I like those things. Instead of your life being completely planned out and your whole life is have to, it's kind of like one pleasant surprise after another, and it's kind of an interesting way to live.
Yeah.
The dolphins sought you out and said, we want you to come and swim with us. Did you live near the ocean at that time when they communicated with you?
No. I was living inland.
Wow.
I wasn't on the ocean.
When you went out to swim with the dolphins off of British Columbia, were those the dolphins that had communicated with you, or is it just a global community for them?
Well, actually, up in British Columbia there, that water is too cold. You can't really go in the water there. You wouldn't survive very long. So there, we went on it to an island, West Craycraft Island up there, and set up tents, and we lived on the land. And then we had a boat and a dinghy, and we'd go out on those to see. We were actually there mainly to have contact with the orca whales. Now, this was all new to me at that time, and the people were just living on the boat, living on land. So that wasn't the swimming part, but the swimming part occurred after I got back to Hawaii, and and then, you know, I came into the warm water, and, you know, I was raised in New Jersey, and you just don't go into the ocean there. I guess some people do, but I never did. So Hawaii was such a blessing because it's warm water year-round. So that's when I could really go in.
The water.
Yeah, it is. I'm so glad you had the chance to be here and to experience that. Yeah.
Oh, it was phenomenal. I got in the water and just had a mask and snorkel and fins because the water is quite warm. And, you know, the salt water is much more buoyant than fresh water, so you really don't have to try to stay afloat, just swim along the surface. And there were, gosh, I don't know, maybe 1,000 dolphins around us. And, you know, you're swimming along and you're looking down into the water, and the rays of the sun are going down into the water, and it looks so heavenly. And then what caught my eye is I looked down, and about 50 below me, there were hundreds and hundreds of dolphins swimming very slowly, like a parade.
Yeah.
So I said, well, I can hold my breath pretty well, and I'm a fairly strong swimmer. So I took a big breath, and I swam down to about 30, 35 feet, something like that, cleared my ears two or three times. And then I just went motionless. And the dolphins were maybe 10 or 15 feet below me. And as they went by, they didn't swim with their fin up, their dorsal fin up. They turned to the side, swimming sideways, and looked up at me with their one eye and just, like, you know, introducing themselves to me or something. But the collective feeling that came from them, I didn't get words, but I got this, you know, very friendly, you know, welcome to our home kind of feeling. And then I ran out of air. And because I'm here means I didn't drown. I did get back to the surface. But that was an amazing feeling. And then a lot of them were just jumping up into the air and twisting around and showing off. And I think they enjoyed swimming with humans.
Oh, absolutely. And just as you described that, that's how it is. Because on that trip I took that time to British Columbia, when I got there, I wondered, oh, what a mistake I've made. Because if you've ever been up there, it's not sandy beaches. I thought I would be like on vacation, you know, sandy beaches, nice warm sun. Instead, it was raining almost all the time, rocky beaches, and all these logs, like from the logging companies, these logs get away from them sometimes, and they're floating in the water. So it was almost a little dangerous there. You had to be able to climb over these logs all over on the beaches. But when I was feeling kind of down, saying, how am I going to last here for 30 days, you know, in this wet weather with people that I didn't really relate to. They were all talking about the moss and the trees and taking care, you know, they were wonderful, talking about all these environmental things. And I felt like, you know, the square peg in the round hole kind of a thing. And just when I was feeling so down, I walked toward the ocean, and I just stood there staring out in my big coat, wondering what was I going to do. And that's when I saw this, like, spout. And I thought, oh, my gosh, you know, that must be a whale out there. And I kept looking at it, and it started to come, like, right toward me as I was standing there. I couldn't believe my eyes, and I knew enough at that time about whales that it was not the orca that we had come to see, because it didn't have that great big dorsal fin. And I was wondering what it was. So it kept coming closer and closer, and finally it came so close into shore, and then I realized it was like rolling around in the pebbles to scratch its body and scratch its back, probably knocking barnacles off and things. Mm-hmm. And at one point it just stopped so close that its eye was above water.
Wow.
And I had this eye contact, and as it looked at me, and you know, the eye, it's not that huge. Sometimes people think huge whales have huge eyes, but you know, it's about three times as big as ours. And but you could see it. I mean, it was so alive, so warm, so sparkling, and looking right at me in this, it was like at dusk. And I was looking back, and then I started to feel wave upon wave of love coming over me. It was just incredible. There was so much love that I was nearly in tears. And I thought, you know, I'm going to melt. I'm going to disintegrate. I don't think I can take it. This is too much love for me. And the minute I thought that, just boom, it stopped right in that moment. The waves of love stopped coming to me. And right then and there, I knew that the whale had heard me or felt me, knew what I was experiencing, and stopped sending it to me at that moment. And that really was my first communication with a physical cetacean, you know.
Yeah, and I was going to say, you know, their picture sets and their experiences, they're very different than land-dwelling mammals.
Mm-hmm.
So what you just shared with me tells me that they know something about desire, about love, about peaceful living, and maybe they are trying to share it with us.
Yes, they're very advanced. I mean, they know so much, and to me it's a wisdom. A wisdom is intelligence with kindness, you know, a love for humanity and for all life, and of course for the earth and the oceans. That's what high intelligence is. And there's just so beyond us and what we experience. I think my friend John Lilly, when he was alive, Dr. John Lilly, who was kind of the one who began so much of the interest in dolphins in particular, he would say that communicating with a dolphin was like communicating with at least six of them at the same time. And they were all sending you information. And he said, if you can't understand it, you've got the problem, not them. You know, because you have to be able to figure it out. And it's
well,
true.
It also seems, though, that they must have had some kind of experience with you before, because they singled you out. They didn't come to the city that you lived in. They came to you and said, Joan, we want you to come and swim with us. So they knew your personality. They knew how to reach you. How did you ever resolve that in your mind that, now, wait a minute, you know, they had my mental cell phone address. How did they find me here? Why did they communicate directly with me?
It's really true. I mean, in retrospect, I realized that. At the time, I was just kind of going along with what was happening. But at one point, they did communicate to me that they were aware of my presence when I lived in Florida. You know, first I lived in Florida, then I lived in California. And it was true, when I lived there, I lived on one of the bays, the bayou there, you know, and there were dolphins swimming there all the time, and they would leap in the air, and I would think, oh, they must have escaped from SeaWorld Park, because how did they learn that? Where did they learn that? I mean, you know, now it sounds silly, but back then, really, dolphins weren't that much in the public eye. People were not that aware of them. So I would admire them and just think, well, maybe I should call the aquarium and let them know. But at some point, the dolphins did indicate that they were aware of me there. And it was interesting that I always chose then to live, you know, within fairly easy driving distance of the ocean. So it does seem, when you look back, that it was something that was meant to be. But it seemed like I was the last one to know initially, because I was quite content with my life as it was. And yet, it was interesting because I was at that time already in contact with some extraterrestrial friends, and they had told me something very profound that made me want to reevaluate my life. Very simple words that probably took me about 2 years before I really understood what they meant. And they said, losers are supported by those who believe in losers. So I thought, well, what does that mean, you know? And here I was working at that time for the state of Florida Health and Rehabilitative Services for many years as a intake counselor for abused children, and had to represent them in court. It was very difficult work with a lot of burnout and very emotional. And so often the courts would return the children to their abusive environment. It was difficult. And I was helping, but my caseload was increasing and increasing, and I was on call and having to go to homes in the middle of the night and things like that. I was really exhausted. And what these beings, these extraterrestrial friends who identified themselves as bright as the light of Sirius, when they said losers are supported by those who believe in losers, it was a little wake-up call to me to say, what do you want to do in your life? Yeah, you might be helping people with the work you're doing now, with going to the court and all. But you're supporting that whole system. Instead, wouldn't you rather be doing something that brings joy, that's going to add more joy and fulfillment to the world?
So they kind of let you know that there was a change coming in your life.
Yeah, exactly. And so to me, you know, even as a counselor, you know, what happens, of course, in counseling, people come and tell you their problems and you all look at it together and you work it out and it's helpful. But you're always focusing on those problems. So when you are instead for therapy, you go to be with the dolphins or just for fun, then you're focusing on joy. And when you are immersed in that joy, you are so empowered that you change your life. You just want to, you choose to, it becomes clear how to do it, and you feel very inspired. So that's really when I changed.
Yeah, that seems like a much better prognosis for a human to be focused on joy and to be focused on something that's going to fulfill you, that's going to make you feel happy, that's going to give you hope, instead of the cycle of soul wounds over and over again.
Right.
You know, I hear stories of people getting cured of illnesses, gaining a feeling of inner peace, and even messages, you know, being received by people who swim with the dolphins. And this, I mean, it might be common knowledge with most of our listeners, but, you know, what were some of the great things, or the very uncommon things, or higher order things that you've seen while you have hosted dolphin research?
Well, yeah, there's a lot about the interactions between dolphins and people who are ill emotionally or physically, spiritually, wanting some inspiration. The dolphins have relayed to me in the way they do. They have questioned. They said, why is it that the human race focuses so often on negative things and then proceed to rerun those things through their mind and base their life on a reaction to those kinds of things that occurred perhaps in their childhood? And they showed us that we can rewrite our life, that we actually can create a new script for ourselves. We can look at the things in our lives that were positive, and there were always some, no matter what kind of life people had, and then focus on those and create their life based on those. So that was one, you know, the psychology end of it that they were teaching me about that was helpful. And then also I work with an organization called Make-A-Wish Foundation.
Right, I've heard of that.
Do you know them? Yeah. They bring children who are terminal, and they grant their dying wish.
Right.
Now, it used to be, I mean, many children want their dying wish to be to swim with dolphins, and they used to go to the captive facilities. Of course, it would be much easier because many of these children are not well, and they need support and help. But now the children are so aware that they say, oh, no, we want to be with free-swimming dolphins. So the organization has contacted me on a number of times to bring children out to see the dolphins. And it is so rewarding, of course, because the children, I think it's partly related to where they are, that they're, you know, only partly on this planet and partly have left already, and they're so aware and so in touch. They just love the dolphins so much. So I've been, of course, with children with autism and cerebral palsy, multiple sclerosis, you know, some of them that are paralyzed and brain tumors, cancer, different kinds of illnesses. And it is interesting because I've received phone calls later from some of the doctors working with these patients who have amazing results to report of that the patient doesn't need their medication anymore, they can get up out of the wheelchair, they can walk up and down steps, their neurological abilities seem improved, they can count, where maybe they couldn't count, they had trouble counting, they could count from 1 to 20 perfectly. So many different pieces of information come in. Now, I don't always get feedback from everyone. I know I had a little girl, well, she was 12, she wasn't so little, and she came from Japan with her parents. And at that time, I was living down at the house right at the ocean, at Dolphin House in Hawaii. And I had a little Zodiac without a motor. And I would just put the people in that little Zodiac and then attach my kayak, and I'd paddle the people out, pull them out. I didn't really want to have an engine in that sacred bay.
Right.
And so this little girl, you know, she was 12, and we put a life jacket on her, and we put her in. Now, her parents were just as courageous because they didn't know how to swim. They were afraid, but they went into that Zodiac, and they sat down on the floor of it and held on tight. And, you know, it was a gentle ride out, of course, because I'm just pulling it slowly. Put the little girl in. I'm talking a minute to the parents, and I look, and she's moving away. She's going out to sea. Well, not quite, but I had to quick get in the water and catch up to her. And the dolphins were there, and as usual, they were making a lot of sounds all around her, and she started making sounds back, which was amazing. Now, it wasn't anything like beautiful. It was like, you know, sounds like that, but she was so happy to be with them. Her parents were in tears, and she stayed out there as long as the parents could take it. And then we had to get her back in the boat and bring her back. And the beautiful thing, and this is just one example of what happens, is I'm talking again to her parents. We're back on land in my backyard there. And the little girl, she went over to a flowering bush, and no one was really watching or paying attention. She picked a flower, and she brought it over, and then she touched my arm, and I looked over at her, and she looked me in the eyes, which is very unusual for children with autism. And she put the flower up to me and handed it to me wordlessly as a gift. And
wow.
I took that, and I was just so touched, you know, because they're just not that interactive normally, you know. So the parents said that she was much, you know, when they got home, she would sit and eat dinner with the parents, and she would pick up her room, and she was, you know, really listening to them and doing things and being part of the family. It probably lasted only about 2 weeks or something, you know, before it kind of wore off. But
well,
we
still,
have amazing
that
results.
Memory is now part of her life. I mean, she's never, even if she can't express it, it's still part of her memory, and it's going to go on with her.
Right,
forever.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah, I always think if it was my child, I would definitely move where the dolphins were. I would have those children
sure.
in the water all the time. You know, even the ocean just alone by itself is so healing, you know?
Do you think that the dolphins sort of sense that there is a weakness or a need in that person and sort of gives extra attention to a person who has that need?
Yes, I think definitely. They're so sensitive, and of course they're vibrational masters, you know, so they can pick things up in the water very much more easily than we can in the air even. And I've seen it over and over. First of all, they're just very gentle with children. At the same time, they love children. We say when we have children on the boat, oh, we've got our lures. We're going to lure the dolphin with them because they love to be with children. But, yes, they're just so aware. Like, if they have a child in the water who's a good swimmer and kicking and excited and maybe even can dive a little, the dolphins are doing the same thing, you know, swimming all around and leaping over their heads just about and diving down. And then if you have a child that's paralyzed and can barely move, the dolphins slowly circle around just so gently. And you know what they do that's so neat? They do this with my grandchildren, too, when I have them here. When my grandchildren were small, their heads were too small to fit a mask, so they couldn't really look underwater, you know, a snorkeling
mm-hmm,
mask.
Mm-hmm.
So they were on a boogie board above the water, and the whole time they'd be out there, the dolphins would stay on the surface so they could see them. They didn't have to look underwater. They didn't have to dive or wear a mask. They just
wow.
touch my heart all the time. They are so aware. And of course, with adults, too, there's a lot of people who want to see the dolphins, are looking forward to it, and then when it comes time to go in the water, they go, oh, they're bigger than I thought they were. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know if they feel safe
than
in the
I
water. Yeah, is this the whole ocean going around
Wait,
this whole island?
I can't
island?
See the bottom.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a little hesitancy, you know, and the dolphins are just will keep a distance. until the people kind of get used to the mask and the snorkel and feel comfortable and are floating a little bit. And then as the people are more comfortable in the water, the dolphins come closer and closer.
I never thought about the fact that they survive. They communicate in the ocean by very, very subtle vibrations. They can sense weakness in their prey. They can find one another and communicate with one another, even in large groups. I never thought that they might be able to pick up vibrations from humans in the water that we might broadcast in the water that we're unaware of, but they're certainly sensitive to it, like stress or fear or even love, and they respond to that.
Yeah, for sure. Researchers have determined that each dolphin has its own signature sound that it makes. Mm-hmm. Well, what I've learned is that humans do too. You know, like we are all resonating a tone, a sound, even if we don't notice it or don't hear it that well. But we are resonating a sound that's comprised of many experiences we've had that leave us with frequencies that are part of our being. And the dolphins are so sensitive to things like that. They know us even better than we know ourselves. They can pick up our frequency, our sound. And I truly believe that you can come back 3 years later and they will know you, or even longer than that. They will know you by your sound.
Wow.
So they're natural balancers. When they see something out of balance, they will sonar it. They will release energy. They will do healing. I have to be careful using that word, but, you know, really help people who have had injuries. I had a woman who, she had been in a car accident just before she was scheduled to come to Hawaii and meet the dolphins.
Oh.
She had her neck in a neck brace, you know.
Yeah.
And she was determined to go in anyway, and so she said, I don't care, you know, I can't move my head from side to side, but I want to be with the dolphins. So she went in, you know, carefully, gently, and spent time in there. When she got back, the doctor could not find anything wrong with her neck. I mean, the x-rays, there was nothing wrong with it. He said, what happened? He just decided his first x-ray must have been wrong. He couldn't understand it.
That's amazing. Well, that being said, were there specific dolphins or family pods with whom you had a special relationship, or did they share the joy that they had with you, with the whole community, or was there a special group that associated with Joan Ocean?
Well, you know, when I first started, actually, nobody was really swimming with them. Well, of course, you'd get the occasional person who's a good swimmer would be in the water and come upon them. But if you read the books here in Hawaii about dolphins and whales, the book said that the spinner dolphins, which we swim with, are very shy, and that they'll ride the bow wave of your boat. But if you go in the water, they swim away. So that was really true, and that was the way they were. And they still are in a lot of ways. But the secret is, if you stay in there, you know, humans were so impatient, you know, oh, they're gone, I'm out of here, you know. If you stay in there, then they come back. You know, it seems like once they know that you really are sincere about wanting to be with them and learn from them and share with them and just enjoy, they will come back. So that's what I ended up doing. Every single day, I didn't let anything interfere with my time with the dolphins. Every morning, I just went out, usually at 6 in the morning when it was dark, and would be out there. And it took about a couple of months before the group, and there was about 35 in the bay at that time, I could tell when the time came when they allowed me into their pod, so to speak. Before then, I'd kind of been swimming along and couldn't catch up and, you know, behind them and waiting for them to come by. But all of a sudden, it changed. And it was like their field of energy in the water, which this has been documented among, like, animals that live in herds, and that they have, like, a field of energy around them that is kept solvent, that's kept only for them. And if anyone steps into it, the lead bull, if it's buffalo or something like that, starts to paw the ground, like they will charge or attack. They really maintain that. Well, it seems the dolphins have this same field of light around them. And you can be swimming with them but not in it. So this time I became part of the pod. And it was an amazing thing because all of a sudden I could swim as fast as they could. I mean, granted, they
really?
Were not swimming. They weren't swimming fast at that point. They were going in circles. I mean, if they wanted to outswim me, they could. But I could stay with them, and they let me, like, swim in their slipstream, you know, like they do with the babies. So in their water flow field coming off their body as they move along, if you can get close and be right in that, it kind of pulls you along, like bicyclists
right.
do, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
So at that point, that group of dolphins was very accepting of me, and I swam with them. In the beginning there, they came in three different pods, and I just called it pod A, B, and C. And I knew the different dolphins, and I was really there to communicate. I wasn't so interested in keeping notes. But you have to, because you see the same dolphins and you're fascinated by them. So you draw the markings on their body, so you get to know them, and usually they end up getting names based on their markings, you know, like we've got, I'm thinking of Zach, but Zach, you don't know Zach. We've got the crooked fin and Tippy and the white dolphin, and Paint, who's got like strips of paint coming down, and Tic-Tac-Toe, and Cookie. They all have marks that relate to their injuries they have or birthmarks they have.
Right,
so
right.
I would get to know them, and I'd know who swam together, and I could tell that they were in different groups. So that was so fascinating to me that for 10 years I kept track of every dolphin, drew every single dolphin that came in every morning with a little pattern I had where I could trace it in a book with their marking and what their behavior was. And in answer to your question, a number of them were more interactive than others. You know, some were there, it seemed to be with people. Some seemed to be a little more remote, a little more separate from the swimming. They would stay on the outskirts a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, with the regulars like you and maybe some of your staff, did mm-hmm. they develop a relationship with you, or was it just the real estate that they hung around?
Well, it was a place where they had been swimming for a long time. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But they would keep their distance. I mean, you would not believe what they are like now. I mean, the changes in them. Now they swim so close to people, and we have a policy where we never touch them. We keep our arms down at our side, and we don't reach out. We don't do anything that would startle them. But
mm-hmm.
now they are touching us. They are making contact. They come underneath and swim belly to belly. Of course, we play leaf games and bubble games and all kinds of different games out there that they initiated, they originated them, and they definitely chose to be with us. And that was the big thing for me, you know, because always I'd ask, is this all right? You know, dolphins tell me, is it all right for me to swim with you? Is this acceptable? Let me know if it's not, because I would never, ever want to do anything that would hurt you or disturb you in any way. And every time the message would come back, bring the people to meet us.
Wow.
And
I mean, that really is evidence of higher intelligence and a social order that a community would change in such a short time as 10 years to not only tolerate humans in the area. I mean, you know, sparrows hopping around on the patio picking up crumbs from humans, they sort of get trained that that's where the food supply is. But you guys aren't out there feeding dolphins. You're just out there swimming with them. Their community is evolving, and so are the humans that are coming to swim with them.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. And that's something I just love to talk about and live within is the community here. We kind of tongue-in-cheek call it Dolphinville. But, you know, I've traveled all over the world with dolphins and whales in so many different rivers and oceans, and this is the only place that I know of where there's a community of people. There's about 300 or 400 people who have all moved here because of their love for dolphins. And it's truly a human-dolphin community in this one little area, you know, where there are three bays where the dolphins swim regularly with us. And it's good for both the dolphins and the people. I mean, the dolphins have such a good time. And, of course, we've done many things to help them, you know, save their lives, taken lines off of them, helped them when they had, like, coral growing out of their mouth, something stuck, had nets on them. We've brought them up from the bottom sometimes. One time a dolphin was laying on the bottom, and I dove down. He looked fine. There were no marks on him or anything, and I couldn't get him up. He was quite heavy, actually, more than you'd think. And so I got another diver. We went down again. This is just free diving. And then the two of us could bring the dolphin up and give it CPR and try to revive it. Now, this dolphin, we've done that a number of times with baby dolphins. I had a baby dolphin that accidentally, you know, playing around the mouth open, a blue bottle got into its throat and really choked it. It could not, it swelled up and it couldn't breathe. But they will come to us now many times and to see if we can help. Now, it's an interesting thing about when a dolphin dies, they close down their blowhole, you know, at the top of their head. And that's a very strong muscle. And when they close that, you cannot get it open. I mean, I have tried, for the sake of saving their life, to try to pull that open so I could breathe into it and give them some air, and I could not move it. The only thing I could do was open their, you know, their mouth would be a little bit open and breathe into their mouth as much as I could. We really have not been able to revive them once they choose to die, or they're so far along, there's not much we can do to help them. So, but it's very touching sometimes. I know with that one I brought up from the bottom, and no matter what I did, he couldn't be revived, and I couldn't feel any heartbeat. And I was holding him, and the dolphins were all swimming around, and I thought, well, you know, he really shouldn't lay here on the bottom where everyone can see and where the sharks will come, and the swimmers are here, and it wouldn't be good. And so I decided to swim him out to deep water. And I swam along, you know, just carrying him on my shoulder with my arm around, swam, and all the dolphins escorted me. It was beautiful, and two friends with me, and we swam out. And then after we got out a ways, then I released the dolphin and had to kind of lift the tail and point it down so it would sink and go down. And as the dolphin went down, the air I had blown into his mouth was coming out. All these bubbles were coming out. It looked like he was still breathing, and he looked so alive, you know. We go, oh my, and watched him until he was totally out of sight down below in the deep water. And then we, you know, with a blessing and lots of love and sending him on his way, we turned to swim back to shore. And at that point, all the dolphins lined up alongside me in a line on both sides of me and escorted me back to shore. I mean, if I hadn't experienced it, I wouldn't even believe it. It was so phenomenal, very ceremonial, very tender and full of appreciation. So, you know, it's no wonder I can be out there for how many years, 25 years, and I'm never bored, you know.
I wouldn't be bored with that either. It's probably the most touching thing that's ever been on this program. I really appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah.
Do you think that the dolphins communicate around the world with one another? You say you've traveled the world and seen dolphins all over the world, and they're not the same as the ones in Hawaii, but do you think that maybe the ones in Hawaii somehow get the word out, carried by the ocean itself or carried by whales or something, that they know you and they know what you do there?
Well, I think they do communicate around the world, and I think they even communicate any place you're in the water, including your shower. I have had amazing reports of people who have had contact in the bathtub, in the water, any place, and I know of some friends who say that whenever you're in water, you can be in easy contact with the dolphins, you know. But yeah, they. I wonder sometimes, like when I swim in, you know, in the Azores or in the Bay of Bengal or off of Australia or in the Red Sea and Israel, and I start to swim with the dolphins, it's like they accept me in the pod right away. But I'm not sure. Perhaps it's just because I've learned over all these years how to swim like a dolphin, kind of, you know, how to turn when they turn, move when they move. I never swim directly at them. I swim as they do. I join them gently, and we go up and down together. So I'm not sure if it's that they know me or if it's that they relate to me as a dolphin in some ways because I know how to swim with them, you know. But it is interesting. Like, I went for years to the Red Sea, brought groups there. We'd first go to the pyramids, and then we'd swim with the dolphins from a boat in the Red Sea, and there were bottlenose dolphins there. And as many times as I went there, I never saw spinner dolphins. And now, I haven't been going now the past few years, and people tell me there's spinner dolphins in the Red Sea. I'm so amazed. I'm going to have to go back and see that.
That's
so you
a
wonder
long
sometimes.
Trip.
Yes. Oh, trip. They swam all the way over. But, you know, I have learned not to put anything past them, really. When you see some of the phenomena that I have seen, it's just makes you open up to all kinds of possibilities.
Well, do you think the dolphins communicate with other species like whales? I mean, it's clear that they're communicating with humans, and they're actually learning from it. In less than a lifetime, less than one generation, it appears that they individually and as a community, maybe a global community, are learning and growing. But do they communicate with other species besides humans?
Oh, yes, I'm sure they do. You know, the whales come here from Alaska every season, mm-hmm. every winter season, the humpback whales. Mm-hmm. And when they come, often many of the spinner dolphins will swim to meet them. They'll swim north, meeting them as they approach our waters here, as the whales approach the waters. And it's so beautiful to see them all swimming together. And I still wish I could speak dolphinese a little better, because I'm sure that the whales are giving all this information, you know, about their trip, their migration, what they passed, what they saw, and all things like that. And the dolphins are receiving it. And the dolphins live here year-round. They just circle this island all the time. They're not migrating. And they must love hearing the stories about the boats they passed and the coral formations and any new volcanic, organic, earthquake rifts in the water, anything like that, you know. I'm sure they're communicating. And they actually have told me, like the whales have said, that they're really here to work with the meridians of the earth, the energy systems of the earth, and those extending out from the earth. All the power points around the earth and in the oceans as they migrate, whereas the dolphins are here more to work with the human race because, you know, ultimately, I mean, what's going to help this planet but raising our consciousness? I mean, they
right.
know we've got to help the humans in order to save the planet. So, yes, I think they definitely are here.
Do you think maybe there are other sentient beings or races living under the sea that are not known to the general public besides dolphins and whales?
Yes, the dolphins on some occasion have brought me to some underwater lights that I cannot identify at first. You know, I see a white light shining below. Of course, at first you think, oh, it must be the sun shining in the water.
Mm-hmm.
But then you notice it stays in this one spot. And next I would think, well, maybe it's a manta ray, because when the manta rays roll over, they're white underneath. And I thought, maybe it's a manta ray down there. So I'm diving down. No matter how far I dive, I can't get to it. There are some lights down there. Something is going on. And this is in the daylight. We could see it. We could go away in the boat, and then the captain would bring the boat back, myself and everyone. We all see this light still down there way deep in the ocean. Now, that's daylight, but at night, we do see lights coming in and out of the ocean. And I think the dolphins and the whales and probably other sea creatures are aware of this whole civilization living within our oceans. So they have taken me places. We had a great experience where we were in a boat with a group of people. It was one of my seminars, and we got to this bay where the dolphins always play with us up north. And we were there right in the middle of the bay, and we saw them, and they were next to shore. So we waited for them to come to us. You know, we try to always do it on their schedule when they want to swim with us.
Mm-hmm.
And so we waited and waited and waited, and they didn't come over. So I said, well, you know, everybody wait on the boat. I'm just going to swim over there and have a look to see what's going on. So I went all by myself, and it was quite a swim to get all the way to the reef there, to the lava rocks where they were swimming so close to shore. And as I approached, I saw this huge white mass of like plasma underwater. It was about the size of a football field, something big like that. And the dolphins were swimming into it. Yeah. And I just floated looking at this. It was like pulsing. It was white. It looked like it was alive. Now, I've been in the ocean, you know, for 25 years. I had never seen anything like this before. It wasn't algae bloom. It wasn't plankton. It wasn't anything like that. And it was so big. And so I dove down and went inside it with the dolphins. And when you're inside there, you couldn't hear anything else. You could hear the dolphins and you could see each other, but you couldn't hear anything outside. When I came back out of it, I couldn't hear the dolphin sounds anymore. It was very interesting. And I then called on all the people. I called over the boat and I said, come see what's here, come see, you know, because I felt the dolphins were staying there purposely for us to come to that spot and see what was there.
I see.
They wanted us to see it. So the people are saying, well, what is it? What is it? You know, they're yelling from the boat. And so, you know, I was a little self-conscious because the captain, the crew, and the captain and his wife there, and they were not too aware of these things. And I said, finally, I said, it's a ship. It's a plasma ship. And the captain's saying, oh, what? You know, I said, just come and see, you know. So then the whole group came, and we went in and out of this. It was moving. And when you'd have, like, part in and part out, you couldn't see the part of your body that was inside, or if your head was inside, you couldn't see the part outside. Now, I've got a picture of this on my website because it was amazing phenomena the first time it happened. Well, I have seen that more than once now. So this was some kind of a, you know, are you familiar with plasma ships when people talk about the ones like Carlos Diaz? That's kind of moving, pulsating, alive ships. And I think his are coming up from the ground. And that's just what this was. This is what we saw in the water.
Absolutely fascinating.
Yeah. Oh, I have so many stories I could tell you about that. But, yeah, it's they often, when I'm swimming with them, I will say to the dolphins, you know, I will think the thought, I'll say, often I'll say, take me to the whales. Like when the whales first come, I can't wait to see the humpback whales. I just love them. And we can't really swim with them in U.S. waters, you know, but if you happen to be in a place and they come along, it's okay, you know.
Mere technicality.
Yeah, that's a little different. I better watch what I say here, but anyway.
Well,
so the dolphins take me right there, you know, and I see them. So sometimes I'll say, take me to the lights underwater. You know,
right.
And part of it is the visualization. You see, we work with acoustic imagery. Like the dolphins will explain something to me, some information. If I can't understand it, then they send me a sound picture, and that sound picture goes right in. Yeah, you know, like ultrasound or something like that.
We're going to discuss this after the next break. We're going to get into whales. My excellent guest is Joan Ocean. Her website is joanocean.com. We'll open up the phone lines in the next hour. Don't go away. This is X Squared Radio with Brooks Agnew. Joan, welcome back.
Thank you. Yes.
I had someone ask me, what is the lifespan of a dolphin? And I don't know. I didn't Google it, so I thought I'd ask the expert.
Right. Well, if they're left in the wild, it's about 75 years old. They are very similar to humans, actually. In captivity, they're lucky if they live to age 30.
Wow.
As compared to whales, of course, whales can live for hundreds of years. And it's very interesting because they've found a arrowhead, a spearhead in a whale that had died, and they were able to carbon test the spearhead and found that it was a couple of hundred years old. And this was a whale that they already had been documenting its behavior, its migration, and they knew of it for many, many years already, for over 50 years. So we're quite sure that the whales live for hundreds of years.
Wow. Well, that's a lot of wisdom, and I understand. I think I went to the Boston Museum of Science, and they had on display plastic models of the comparison between different brains of things like a parrot and a dog and an ape and a human, and they had a dolphin and a whale. And the whale's brain is about three times the size of a human brain. That's a lot of gray matter.
Exactly.
It seems to be, at least it has the biology, to be a very intelligent creature. And with a few hundred years of life experience to go with it, and it's a global experience because they migrate, well, you said, from what, Alaska to Hawaii? That's a long way.
Right, yeah. And the other way, too, they're coming up from the Antarctic up to, you know, Australia and up to the Caribbean. They come, go back and forth in both oceans, of course, and from Stellwagen Bank up north in the Atlantic down to the Caribbean. So they are really covering the entire planet with their migrations and sharing information. And also, I really do think that they are doing healing, balancing work, however we understand that. You know, their brains are so huge and so complex beyond anything we can understand. We don't even understand our own brains. And to try to communicate with them, you know, it's you're not going to get a story, a language, or information like that. You're going to have an experience. And to be in the water with the humpbacks, for example, I take groups to the Caribbean Sea, where I have a special permit over there, where we live on a boat for a week or 2 weeks, and go into the water every day with the humpbacks. It's just a small number of people that are permitted to do this. And all you want to do is be in the water next to them and make eye contact. And when you do, you just feel so much of who they are. You feel their love so strong, and you know that they love us no matter what has been done to them, you know, by the human race and all kinds of things, the pollution and the nets and the whaling and all, they still just give back love. It is really phenomenal. They are such an example, and the dolphins too, of giving back love no matter what happens to them. And so you feel that profound sensation, that height of true love, true universal, unconditional love, when you're in the water with them. And that's all you want to do. You just want to float next to them, forget the mind, forget the words, forget the images or the messages. You just want to experience that, and you do.
Well, as you've probably heard that I've been asked to lead the Inner Earth Expedition, in my preparations, I've met, you know, many of the finest people imaginable, surely. I mean, I'm going to meet more, too. But I've also had some very strange inputs from sources I didn't expect. The day before we went out dolphin swimming in Hawaii, I was talking with a woman who says she channels whales and dolphins, and is probably part of this community of 300 that you were talking about in Hawaii. And she said that the whales were in communication with the inner earth and that they were key beings in preparing me to lead the group later next year. And I told her that I had a strong feeling that maybe the whales were going to try to make contact with us the next day. And she said, no, the whales, they're gone for the year, and, you know, we're just probably going to see dolphins. But while we were speeding across the water to the northern part of the island in Hawaii, I spotted a water spout. So the boat skipper slowed down, and we didn't make any turns because we were just heading our way, but we slowed down. And this group of pilot whales made a turn and a straight line for us. Now, there's two boats, and we're apart by about, 300, 400 yards, something like that. About 20 of those pilot whales headed straight for the boat. I was sitting right up at the bow, right where the chain goes over with the anchor. And they slowed down, and they passed in review right in front of me, right at the surface, very slowly. And there was this extremely warm feeling that came from them. I didn't get words or pictures, but I felt like they were sort of getting a good look at me for some reason.
Exactly.
Maybe,
yes.
You know, do the whales, I don't know why I had this feeling. I'm not a channeler. I'm not a spiritualist kind of person. But I'm open to any kind of input. I'm not one of those scientists that just throws out data because it doesn't fit my paradigm. But this was something that was really special to me, to be there and to have them come straight for our boat in the middle of nowhere.
Yes.
Was amazing. What do you make of that?
Well, they wanted to see you, maybe even you in particular. You know, this does happen.
There were about 30
uh-huh.
people in our boat, and the people
on the
in
boat.
The back of the boat didn't see the whales. They only
yeah.
came.
Oh, really?
The boat.
Oh.
Yeah. I was hanging out. I had my hand about, I don't know, 3 feet above the water, and they just came almost within touching distance. It was just
yeah.
phenomenal.
Yeah. Well, you know, I just have learned there are not accidents. Accidents are very, very rare. Things like that happen for a reason. They definitely had a reason to come over and for you to see them and for you to have that feeling. That's so important. They are there to help. You know, they have told me, I mean, pilot whales are a member. They're dolphins also. They're larger dolphins. We call them whales because of their size, as many other whales, like the killer whales, better called orcas. But they have said or let me know that they are here for two reasons. They're here for their own evolutionary process. You know, they're learning and growing into more and more love by being here. And they're also here in service to planet Earth to help people. And they will do what it takes. You know, some people might take ignoring somebody, might have more effect on someone than approaching them. But in most cases, it means they will come over. And especially, I've found, people who have the interests of humanity and the Earth at heart. Those are the ones that they will support. So that's a beautiful story, and I'm
well,
so glad to hear that.
Yeah. My wife and son were with me, and uh-huh. my wife's not really into this community, although she's really she's interested in it, and she you know, was along and she's non-swimmer, so she had a really unique experience with the dolphins, too, because,
uh-huh.
as you said, they kind of swam around her and didn't run off and leave her, and they put on a show for her in front of her. But the whales, though, the feeling that they put out made her cry with just,
oh.
she was overwhelmed. And I don't know if my son felt anything, but he was right there hanging over the edge with me watching these whales go by. And that's just, well, besides being great bang for the buck, it felt like this woman who I'd spoken with the day before was correct, that there were these cetaceous messengers that knew that there was an inner Earth expedition going to happen next year, and who was
yeah.
involved with it, and who would be where, and who would be there in Hawaii. And they came to sort of, my feeling was, to let me know that they knew. And maybe they were going to take that message out into the ocean and spread it around that they saw us.
Yeah.
Do you think that's possible?
I absolutely agree. I think that it's right. Just the fact that you thought that that's what came in your mind, that somebody told you that, you know, that woman mentioned that, it's all part of it, part of the process. You know, they certainly were interacting with your frequency. You don't have to be in the water, and they've shown that to me. Sometimes the dolphins have leaped up out of the water, as they do, and they made a sound directed right at me while they were in midair. The captain and I both looked at each other and said, "Did you hear that? Did you?" You know, they will work with your frequency, and I would be very inclined to say that they were probably elevating your frequency, giving you more love, bringing balance, whatever it is, bringing you joy, certainty, inspiration to carry on your work, because that's so important what you're doing. And I can just get this feeling of them saying, "Oh, good, here he is on the boat. We've been trying to make contact with him, and here's our chance." So,
wow.
I just don't hold back anymore, because I have watched them do these things, and it may not be obvious right away that it created a change in the frequency of your body, which means in your thoughts, in your emotions, in your physical cells, but also that, you know, you you would experience it right away, and you may also keep experience it more and more, that you may experience a change in your life. Something different will happen, or a change in your plans with your trip that you're making. Some things will become more and more clear because of it.
Yeah, well, I feel, even though putting an expedition together like this is like Discovery Channel on steroids, you know, the average Discovery Channel documentary costs about $10,000, and this one's about $2 million. So this is way, way out of the budget of any of the TV channels. And it's this is definitely, it's like launching a manufacturing plant, which I do on a regular basis. This is a big project, and it does have come with a lot of stress. But I've never felt more at peace than I do right now. It is just an amazing feeling.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yes, I think it's definitely related to that. I'm so glad to hear that. Next time I'm out there swimming with those pilots, I'm going to thank them. Absolutely. You
well,
know,
I'm
we
gonna have
we
to make a return trip this winter when the, the masters are back.
Yes. Yes.
The
because here in
the
Hawaii.
Pilot whale, yeah.
Uh-huh. Go ahead. You go ahead. I wanted to tell you about the sperm whales too. I get so excited talking on these subjects. So you go ahead.
Well, I was going to say I think the pilot whales are local boys. They don't really travel to the North Pole and back, but the sperm whales are global travelers, and they have a voice that can travel, I understand, for thousands of miles.
Yes,
and
yes.
Does their song change over time, or do they have a thing that they repeat over and over again?
Well, the humpback whales are the ones that we mostly think of with the sound. They're making those beautiful sounds, singing sounds and grunting sounds and all different selection. And they have, on the melon of their head, they have so many different air chambers in there, and they make the sounds out of those chambers. They don't have any vocal cords, of course. And yes, those sounds travel long, long distances. There's something referred to as the SOFAR channel, which is sound, frequency, and ranging channel, which just creates certain water pressures and depths in the ocean. And when the whales put their sound into this particular part of the water there, the ocean, it travels much further than sound would normally carry. So they know exactly how to do that, how to make it travel for thousands of miles. It's really fascinating. There, I've been above the humpback whales when they are sounding, and you know it's usually the males that sound as compared to the females and babies. Of course, they all make beautiful sounds, but there's a particular sound that the males alone seem to make, and they are facing down toward the bottom of the ocean. Their tails are up. And we float, this is in the Caribbean, of course, where it's permitted, above them. And they just keep making sounds into the earth, it seems like, over and over and over again. And I feel like they are talking to somebody down there. And, you know, when we're floating above, this frequency goes through our bodies until we are literally shaking. It feels good, and it's not really frightening, but it actually affects us. It is so strong and powerful. And this is a regular behavior of the whales. Now, what are they doing? What are they communicating? Who are they talking to is what I always say, you know?
Well, a lot of people don't know this, but the ocean off the Caribbean is quite deep. You're not talking a couple hundred feet. Between Cuba and Florida, it goes down like 1,500 feet. This is a very, very deep portion of the ocean. It's the beginning of the Mindanao Trench. So this is an extremely deep area.
Yeah, the Puerto Rican Trench is there, very deep.
Right.
Yeah, so that's where we are. We're in that area, and there's a lot of activity there. The humpback whales are interesting in that they don't, as far as we know, they don't dive extremely deeply. They just go down about 500 feet or so, same as dolphins. And where we are with them in the Caribbean, the area there, it's a special place called Silver Bank where it's shallow. It goes, the most is 100 feet, so 60, mostly it's about 60 feet. So we can watch them all the time. And it's fascinating with whales because they're a little different than dolphins. You know, the whales do stop and rest. The dolphins rest parts of their brain while they're moving. They're moving, moving all the time. But the whale stops and will just go to sleep. You know, and you'll see their huge body, 70,000 pounds, just kind of rolling a little bit from side to side in the current. And sometimes the baby is, if it's a female and they have a baby, the baby has to come up and breathe like every 3 minutes, every 6 minutes. And the mom can stay down an hour and a half. So they will stop and be just rolling there. And it's just so fascinating to float above them and say, what are they doing? You know, it looks like what we would call out of body. And at some point, like I know one time there was a noise underwater. I don't know if some place in the distance, a boat engine started up something, and all of a sudden the whale jumped and then started moving. And it looked just like someone looks, you know, when you come back in your body kind of, or you're suddenly awakened, you know. And it's fascinating to watch them because they have sent me information that's, you know, messages and, you know, I always am careful who I share this with, the people open to it or not, but they really have said that we are not just our bodies. We are not what you see. We are much more. We're interacting with you in a way that's much larger than physical form. We're mirrors of a higher consciousness. And they invite us, like, to look at their image, to use their image, this illusion of form as a symbol, and to use it as a way to connect with the greater universal consciousness. So,
in your opinion,
that's one way.
Do you think that whales meditate?
Well, I think they're always in a meditation, actually, you know, what we would call meditation. That's their normal way of life, in that they're in existing in a very peaceful higher frequency. It's interesting that sometimes people will say to me, well, you know, what are the dolphins and whales saying? And, you know, we're trying to speed up their sounds and slow them down and see if they're speaking English or Spanish or French or what are they saying, you know. Well, what I have found from communing with them is they said most of their sounds are used to create harmony in the environment. So they're not doing words, you know, they're creating harmony.
So they're tuning with the earth.
Yeah, and that makes sense to me. That sounds exactly right.
You know, the earth has frequencies that it resonates. They're very low, sometimes about 1.3 hertz up to about 10 hertz, but cycles per second. There's actually a vibration that the earth resonates at because the crust and the core are rotating at different speeds. It sets up a kind of low frequency vibration in the earth, and it's pretty well known that vibration can shift around like an amoeba, can move. Maybe it's possible that whales are sort of the toning force that balances the earth, because they send frequencies back into the earth to keep it in balance.
Yes. Yes, I would agree with that. Did you ever see that film? Was it Star Trek number 4? Was it about
the whales?
Oh, the
one
with
the whales. Yeah, that was. That,
yeah, because the earth would come to the end without the sound of the whale. I thought there was a lot of truth in that.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah.
And it had a lot of great humor in it and transparent aluminum.
Yes. And, you know, that's something the dolphins and whales have, a great sense of humor, too. I find that, you know, when you have these beings that are loving and advanced, so to speak, you know, as far as being very wise and kind, they are usually funny, too. And the dolphins have done things such as, you know, we play leaf game here a lot in Hawaii, and now it's kind of goes out and it's being played in Florida and other locations too, but where the dolphins bring us a leaf, they carry it on their dorsal fin or their pectoral fin or their tail, and then when they get in front of us, they shake it off, and then we have to try to swim fast and catch it, and then we dive down and let it go down deep, and then the dolphin dives down and get it, and comes up, and we play back and forth like this. And sometimes they'll really fool us because they'll have the leaf on their tail, and they're swimming right in front of us. And then they shake it off their tail, and it's right there. You know, you look like you only have to do a couple of kicks, and you'll have it. But what you didn't know was when they flicked it off, they also made this motion in the water with their tail, creating a little whirlpool.
Mm-mm.
And as you reach for the leaf, right at that moment, it swirls away and goes some other direction. And you don't realize that it's because the water has been churned up intentionally. So, you know, they will, and they'll come in and they'll get it before we can get it. You know, they quick pick it up again and keep us following them. Another time with the dolphin named Zach, he and I were playing the game, just the two of us, and he'd dive down, and then I'd dive down, and I'd get the leaf, and he'd get the leaf, and then I came up for air, and then I looked down, and I couldn't see the leaf. I said, where is it? Where'd it go? And it shines usually pretty golden light in the sunlight in the water, and I couldn't see it, and he's swimming round and round like he's looking for it, too, in a little circle right underneath me, and we're both looking. I thought, well, how could it have disappeared? What did he do, eat it or something? Where did it go? And he slowly starts to just come up slowly in the water next to me, right next to me, and then he slowly rolls to his side, and there he had the leaf plastered against his belly, hiding it from me, and I could see it so clearly. So, anyway, I don't got off on that, but I just think that they are, you know, that's another sign of a very high being, when they have that wonderful sense of humor and sense of playfulness. The whales have communicated that they play 71% of the time, because I ask them, and when I've spoken at whale and dolphin conferences, sometimes the other researchers will say, well, whales don't play. And so I just didn't know for sure, so I just thought, well, I'm going to ask the whales. And the whales said, we play 71% of the time and consider play very important. And that, in fact, is when most of the universal energy and information can enter your awareness, because you're not into your left brain, you're not focusing on something, you're just open, enjoying it, being physical, being in the water and the surroundings and receiving. So, yeah,
I think,
the play is...
Good. It's a great example to us, these great ancient, wise beings, world travelers, obviously peaceful creatures because they don't have war and they don't have social outcasts or anything like that. I think it's a great example for the leaders of the world. Maybe we just need to play more. Maybe we need to show more love to one another, and then we won't have such terrible headlines that we've had. And I notice a lot of my friends who used to be news addicts, especially when news went to 24 hours a day back in the early 90s, they just never turn the news off, and they just want to see the next terrible thing that's coming up. But many of them are turning the news off, and they're realizing that the resonance of fear that goes around and around and around like a constructive interference standing wave in our world, it diminishes in their life, and they have more fun. They play more golf. They play outside. They, you know, eat for fun. Different things that they didn't do before because they were watching the news, and they felt terrible because one nation has announced they're going to wipe out another nation or some weapons test or whatever. It seems like somebody out there is, or something out there, is sending a message to people, hey, turn the fear off. Just go back to love. And maybe it's the whales. Maybe it's the whales and their consciousness that's going out. And people are finally beginning to tune into it. Do you think that whales have been involved in contributing to the consciousness of the world to keep world peace?
Oh, yes. Yes, I do. I mean, when you realize that the whales and interest in the whales and research on the whales is a relatively new science, they could live very deeply and be unseen, but now they come close to shore, the dolphins and the whales, they make themselves available to people. And that's what they want to do. They want people to feel the joy, to feel the love, and then to express it in their lives. So I think they are contributing to that in large-scale ways. I mean, when you see where they're located all around the world, I mean, there are dolphins, you know, in the Gulf and in the Red Sea and in places where there is a lot of war going on. I think they are emanating just what's natural to them. You know, it just comes naturally. They live a life of love and living positively. And they have control. You see, sometimes it seems, maybe this is the psychologist in me that sees this, but in the human race, it seems sometimes we feel almost victims, you know, where we're pulled this way and that way, and there's the news, and it's so negative, and where's the good stuff? You know, there's good stuff happening. Where is it? Yeah. Can you hear me okay?
All right, we're back.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's just a little bit of digital bubbling there, but it'll go away in a few seconds.
Okay. So, yes, I'm very aware that the dolphins and whales, take control of their lives. They don't let other things affect their emotions. They really have control of their bodies and their emotions, and they've shown that, you know, even when they dive, they know they don't get the bends, they don't get narcosis, they don't get sick. They know how to change their body and actually bring all the different organs in their body together, make them compact so they don't get air bubbles. I've witnessed them give birth by choice. You know, sometimes five female dolphins will come together at the same time and give birth one after another. They choose the time and place. So they
wow.
have that ability to make those decisions. And emotions, too. Like, they choose to be joyful and happy. And I think it's get return from that. And they even choose, of course, every breath. You know, they're conscious breathers in that they don't breathe automatically like people do. So if you give a dolphin or a whale, if you anesthetize them, they'll die. Because they have to be awake all the time to breathe.
Uh-huh.
They choose every single breath. So they choose that, and they seem to also choose when they want to die in many cases. I mean, if someone puts them in captivity and they don't want to be there, they just sink to the bottom, close their blowhole, and go out. And whales and dolphins are beaching themselves, you know, one might be sick or have parasites in the brain and not be able to navigate, often the whole family will come in with them and be willing to die with them because of their love for each other.
Oh,
they that's more important to them. Death is just a passing on to another form. So they can choose all of those things. And even there were some tests done on them on, like, how they respond to anger. And the scientists in a captive situation were able to stimulate the parts of the brain that bring on anger. And when they did, the dolphins would experience what, you know, we know of as anger, and their whole bodies would shake and shake. And they would just shake them and shake them and shake them until it passed. And then they would just swim normally again. And the point was, they never took it out on another dolphin or on a human being.
Wow.
They handled it themselves. So, you know, we just get little glimpses of what they can do. But I think it's just normal for them to give out love and healing to planet Earth and to people. They do it automatically.
So many things we could talk about there, from conscious breathing. Because, you know, like you say, human beings' breath is controlled by the medulla. It's the involuntary nervous system. But the higher masters of meditation, they take over their breathing and they begin breathing consciously. And they can lift themselves not only to higher vibrations, but higher states of consciousness that are well beyond what normal eyesight or normal hearing could give them, and actually have contact with other times and other places. And, you know, our brains are pretty small compared to a whale's, but here you have a being that has evolved to the point where that's all they do is conscious breathing, and they have a big brain to go with it. That's a lot of consciousness directed.
Yes. Yes. Now, are you there? Can you hear?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, because, it's a little hard. And in relation to that, the dolphins have told me, and I wrote about this in my book, they referred to something, they called it going through a window in time. And I was asking them, I said, how long have you been on planet Earth? Because, of course, we hear they've been here for millions of years, and yet it always struck me kind of odd that for some reason people have only been paying attention, I guess, to the ocean in general and to dolphins and whales, you know, over the last 50 years or so.
Yeah.
So where were they and what was going on all those other years that they lived here? And the dolphins said, well, we are millions of years old, but not on your planet.
Uh-huh.
And I said, whoa, what do you mean by that, you know? So they said that they had come in more recently to assist the Earth because the Earth needed help. They could see that it was kind of going backwards, you know, it was devolving instead of evolving. And
right.
They decided to come in. And I said, well, what do you mean? How can you do that? And so they said, well, we come through a window in time. And so the way I can best explain it was they showed me through acoustic imagery this, like, our timeline, of course, in three-dimensional reality where it's all linear. And they very, very carefully, and this would be, you know, the entire nation, however they understand themselves, of dolphins and whales, a higher consciousness certainly, would look over at our timeline, and they have the ability to go into the past or the future, because they're outside of three-dimensional reality, and so they can do that and be multidimensional. And they would look to see where is the right time for them to come in into our reality. And they said with great care and great precision, they chose the place to come in. And when they did, when they entered into Earth and to our lives here, the lives of the humans, they brought with them all of the artifacts, the myths, the stories, the Roman, the Greek, the objects that have dolphins on them, the books. All at once, it came into our minds, into our awareness, into our history books, so that to the human race, it seems like the dolphins have always been here because we've got all this proof, right? And they can play with us around that proof thing, our need for proof, because they can make all the proof they need to. But they came in, and everyone just assumed they've always been here. Well, I wondered, what? You know, that was a lot to wrap my mind around. I thought, how can that be, you know? So I thought, well, here I am living in Hawaii on an island where we're in the middle of the ocean. The Hawaiian people would know. They would know if the dolphins had been here a long, long time or not. So I began to investigate that, and I looked, and I noticed that in the chants, in the Hawaiian stories, in the hula, there's no mention of dolphins. And that did strike me as very odd because they're seafaring people. So I have a good friend here who is a kahuna. He's in his 80s now. And I asked him about it. I said, how come you don't mention dolphins in any of your stories and your music? And he said just very clearly, they weren't here. So that was one piece of information. And then another, when I was in Egypt, and we're touring the temples there with my group, we looked at the hieroglyphics on the wall, and all of a sudden there was one of a dolphin. And I thought, well, look at that. That's interesting. There's a dolphin here. And I had never seen that in any of the books before. So we had two Egyptologists with us, and they were the experts, and they were describing everything to us. And when I pointed that out, they looked. They went, what? They looked. They opened their books, and they started thumbing through and thumbing through. They couldn't find anything about it.
How about that?
It was like they had never seen it before. So anyway, you know, there's a lot going on beyond our 3D understandings of it. And so the dolphins have said they came in to assist us, to move us beyond three-dimensional and the reality of our five senses, to help us evolve into our sixth sense and beyond. And so, yes,
well, that
I think
seems, that seems very appropriate, because what I'm seeing in my research is I put together this team for this expedition. There are 100 of us going. For some reason, the experts that are coming forward have a lot to do with considerations of time. The observation effect in physics is probably one of our most provable theorems, in that when we observe something, we change it. And when you observe the past, you can't help but change it. Well, if you change the past, you change the present, because the accumulation of the past is what makes the present. So this is very profound, what you're revealing to us, that the cetaceans have not always been here. They came at a precise time and brought a new past with them, which changes our present. And it is amazing that you have a society there in Hawaii, a kahuna, who's a spiritual leader, who says there's no history of dolphins being here. But here you have the island that's perfect for their environment. Plenty of food, warm water, everything that they need, and yet dolphins have only been there, you know, less than a generation. That is just amazing.
Yes, and you know, since that, I mean, when I wrote that in my books, I almost wasn't going to put it in. I didn't want to lose credibility and all back then. You know, it was a good 10 years ago, and I hesitated, but I sensed that the dolphins really wanted in there. Well, I'm glad I put it in, because since then I've heard more about that. The term vertical intervention is sometimes used, and I think it's happening here also among our star friends, the star beings, in a way that's very positive. And always when it's called for, you know, people are concerned about our free will and should anything intervene. I think it is being called for. I think there are many people right now on the planet who are, could be called walk-ins, who are very spiritual souls and beings. And we are calling for that. We're asking for it from right here on the earth. So they're responding to that. And the dolphins, they have taken me into the future. We've swam together sometimes for hours. And, you know, in the beginning years, I was the only one out there. There was no one else. I don't have a staff or anybody working, one person working for me, but, you know, it was just me and them. That was it. I didn't know what it was going to develop into as much as it did. But when we'd swim together for that long, a few things would happen. I suddenly would realize I was feeling like a dolphin. I began to feel like a dolphin. And then I realized they were like shape-shifting with me. They became the human, and I became the dolphin. So that was very fascinating for me to experience, and because they're so loving, I allowed that. I didn't feel like I was being taken over or anything negative about it. It was a beautiful experience, a great learning experience for me. And of course, you know we know we can do that. We can do that with trees. We can do that with our cats and dogs, with other animals. You know, we can really merge energies with each other. So when I'd be going along with them like that, and I'd get kind of into an active meditation, being moved along in their water flow field, there'd probably be like maybe five of them on both sides of me. And at some point, they would just take me right out of body or out of my physical awareness, which was perfectly safe in their company, and they would take me places. And so they took me into the future. At one point where I was shown like a sign that said the date, you know, and just to let me know it was a future time. And I went to this place. It was just devastating. There was nothing left. There was nothing green. Everything was barren and dusty. Everything was flattened out and down. There were no more houses. It looked like there was no one alive. And I said, wow, what is this? It was so upsetting to me. And then I saw there were some people living in little lean-to shifts, making places to survive and in the ground in caves and all doing as best they could. They were able to communicate telepathically, which made them in contact with people, little small pockets of people in other places. But the point of this was that it was so devastating for me to see this, that when I came back into, you know, my physical awareness there out in the ocean with them, I was just in tears. My love for the earth, and what had hit me was the realization of what has happened to planet Earth. Where is all the beauty? It's gone. I just was so upset. I couldn't stop crying, and I wouldn't do that again. It was so upsetting to me that I actually didn't go swimming for a couple of weeks because I didn't want them to bring me there again. So eventually...
You think that was a future view of this planet?
Well, yes, yes. And that was the word, a future view, because eventually my curiosity got the better of me. I wanted to experience that again. That was pretty far out. You know, let me see if that'll happen again. So I went back out there, and I'm swimming with them, and all of a sudden, kind of out of body again, and now I'm in this other place, also on the earth, I knew, and it was beautiful. There was green leaves and plants and streams of clean water and people there all sitting on the lawn and happy and peaceful. It was, and I said, well, where is this? And the answer came back, you know, this is the future of the earth. And I said, well, what do you mean? You know, and of course, as you know, and your listeners know, the future is what we're creating now. So it's very changeable, and we can create it, and perhaps it's even individual. Perhaps we will each go into a different future.
Maybe the dolphins were proving that we do not have to march down the path laid out for us by the prophets toward Armageddon. We can, by our intention, by our sovereignty, choose another future for this world. It is possible to do.
Yes, absolutely. I completely agree. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Well, so do you think the whales ever lose patience with humans? I mean, are they fed up with us bombing each other and hoarding energy and withholding food from one another and guarding our borders so that people can't travel freely? I mean, do they get fed up with us?
Well, you know, they seem to respond to us as if we were little children in a way. You know, we get as fed up as you might get with a three-year-old or a two-year-old experiencing their terrible twos or something. You know, you understand that it's something we're going through, and you hope we're going to come out of it, and we're going to grow up and become mature spiritual members of the community, the greater galactic community. And they're there to support us and help us. So I don't really get that. You know, I think they're going to take care of the earth. I think they're going to make sure that they're safe and the ocean is safe and things such as that. And so they are watching closely what we're doing. And you could even say they're dying to save us sometimes. You know, the sad thing, of course, with dolphins and whales is they sink to the bottom. Most of the whales, some whales float, but when they die, they sink. So no one even knows how many, you know, were killed by sonar, by the active sonar of the Navy or other pollution in the water, waste material and toxins. So they really are trying to let us know as best they can, and even with their own lives, that something has to change. You know, more than 51% of our oxygen comes from the ocean. And yet for years we've just mindlessly thrown everything in there. You know, and I mean, I'm just learning about this too. You know, I'm not judging other people, but it's something we're all learning, and they're teaching us as fast as they can, it seems, to love them, to respect life. Yeah.
Most people believe that the rainforest is where we get a lot of our oxygen, but that's not true.
Sure.
Mature trees do not put off oxygen. Only growing trees put off oxygen. Nearly all the oxygen that we get on our planet comes from activity in the sea. If we kill the sea, we kill this planet.
Yes, that's right. That's right. And so, you
know,
I think they're patient with us, and yet they realize there's an urgency. You know, I feel that urgency when I'm with them. I feel the urgency to bring people to meet them and be changed. You know, to change overnight, to care, to want to do something, to get involved.
Yeah.
You know, I'm part of a lawsuit with the... I know, it's that time again. Huh? You got
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay.
Tell us about the lawsuit.
Okay. You know, I've been mostly apolitical, not that I'm opposed to politics, but just because I feel that my job is kind of to bring the positive side, you know, to represent the dolphins and whales and be the way they are. But finally, when seeing dolphins and whales being killed like that, I just couldn't take it anymore. And so I did join, you know, the lawsuit of the Natural Resources Defense Council against the U.S. Navy. And, you know, they've got to stop. They've got to stop killing all those whales. So whatever, you know, we can do, we have to join together to do it. And if it has to be done politically, here in Hawaii, we actually, when they came here, when the Navy ship came here and was deploying that lethal sonar into the water that was killing the whales, what could we do? You know, how could we do anything to stop that? They had a huge ship that they had chartered, the Korichu West. They were there every day. They were doing their experiments. And it was whale season when the whales were giving birth to the babies.
Oh,
it was right in
my
February. And our hearts were broken. You know, we love these whales. This is family. So what could we do? We could go in the water. We could go in the water with the whales and die with them. I know it sounds dramatic, but it was like, would they kill us too? You know, what would happen? And so what we did was we got as many little boat captains we could get to take turns, and they so kindly, their own expense, using their own boat and all that cost to run it. Every day we went out next to the military ship, and then we would radio them, and they'd be sending out this array. We could hear it. We could pick it up on hydrophones. And then we would tell them, you know, we'd call them and say, we are now putting swimmers in the water. We are now putting swimmers in the water. And then in we would go. And they had to turn it off, or we would be killed.
Wow.
And they did turn it off.
That's amazing, the sound pollution that they were dumping in the water. I was going to ask you if you've ever been to the North Pole.
No, not yet. I'd like to go there, yeah.
Well, I think I'd like to invite you to join us on the expedition next summer, not this summer, but summer of 2008. If we get this expedition going, it's warm inside the boat. It will be cold.
Oh, is
on the
it outside. Good?
But, yeah, they have a swimming pool on the inside of the boat. And, you know, we're trying to put together the world's best experts, and I can't think of anybody better than you to add, because that's just a feeling that I have. And,
well, thank you so much. I would love to go on that. That would be wonderful.
Well, you're in, because you know the leader. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about Sasquatch. So don't go away. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio. My guest is Joan Ocean. Her website is joanocean.com. Don't go away. You won't want to miss this next hour. We'll be back after these messages. Joan, sometimes we have many thousands of listeners that just sit out there and listen because the content is so good from the guests that come on this program. And tonight is definitely one of those programs. I am amazed at your research. It reminds me of a woman named Jane Goodall, and she worked with apes and learned so much about their language and their social structure. And I sort of compare the work that has been done with dolphins to the work she did with primates, except she didn't take tourists in to meet her gorillas. But in my untrained opinion, the cetaceans are much brighter and more complex than the primate species, and I know you agree with this. So we're about to bring a new area of research to our listeners for Joan Ocean. You've heard the stories about Sasquatch, but you're about to learn a brand new aspect of these amazing creatures. If you go to joanocean.com and click on the link for Sasquatch, you'll see that it's very clear there's evidence that they read, write, they shapeshift. She's got a voice project going. They create infrasound that affects the environment, and they even dematerialize at will. We're going to discuss all of that this hour. You ready, Joan?
Yep, I'm here and looking forward to it.
All right. Well, tell us about your new ventures into an area of the Earth that's not the ocean. We're not going to reveal to our listeners where it is on Earth, But you're now working with a new community. And how big is this community of beings? Who are they?
Well, first of all, let me say thank you so much for mentioning Jane Goodall, because she's my idol, and I think the world of her. That would be so nice to be able to be like her and do the work she has done. I just appreciate her. And yes, this is a whole new area of research now, and again, it's about communication research, and the ultimate purpose is, hopefully, and I feel it is, for the help of the Earth and of humanity. So I have learned that there are such things as Sasquatch, which for most of my life, and I've lived many, many, many years now, I did not believe in them. I thought they were a hoax. I thought maybe there was one ape running around the world and people were spotting it from time to time. I kind of thought of it that way. And what happened was I received an email from someone, you know, and who wrote, and they said, I'm communicating with Sasquatch, and I see that you, Joan, communicate with dolphins. Could you tell me what you do, and maybe I can use it for communicating? So when I got that, I thought, oh, right, you know, it's a joke. Somebody wants me to say something, and I'll make a fool of myself. I'll sound silly. So I was very careful. I wrote back, and I said, well, yeah, when I'm with the dolphins, I mimic their body language, and I make sounds that imitate their sounds, and they seem to like that, and they come close to me. So the person emailing me wrote back, thank you so much, it's so helpful, and he went on to send this long email about all the things he'd been doing out in the woods to try to make contact. He'd been recording their sounds. So I thought, well, can this be true? You know, I could see that the person was sincere, of course. So that led me to look into it further and to read some books. There's a wonderful book out there by Kiwone Lapsaritis about the psychic Sasquatch and their UFO connection. So since I've always felt I've had that connection to the star people, that was the book that was of interest to me. And I subsequently was invited to go to this place where there's this couple on the mainland who live in a house on the edge of the woods, and they have been having ongoing contact with this family of, they call themselves the Ancient Ones. It's different than Sasquatch to some degree. They seem to be a little more evolved than some of the Sasquatch, and I'm careful about saying that because I'm not sure if that's true. But this is a family of 33. Now, one of the elders died, but a new baby was born, so there's still 33 in the family. And they're a people. They're not apes. And they look, their face looks very much like ours, but they're 6 foot to 7.5 feet tall, and they're very hairy, as the way they are depicted, except on their face. Their face doesn't have hair on it. The hair starts at the top of their neck and goes on down, which, of course, is a good thing since they live outdoors. And their hair, like, it's as if you had bangs and you let your hair grow down long so it covers the face often. But when you pull that hair back, it looks the same as ours. They live for about 125 to 150 years of age. And they've been out there since forever. They told me that they were at our level of evolution during the last ice age. Now, I think that's 12,000 years ago. So 12,000 years ago, they were as evolved as the human race is now.
Wow.
And as you mentioned, yes, I mean, I went there. Before going there, they said that they would, through this friend who lives there, they said they would like to meet me. And so they sent me a gift. They sent me this beautiful carved thunderbird. I called it a thunderbird. That's what the Native American people would call it, of a sacred symbol of a thunderbird. The wise ones, the ancient ones, have actually called it a dream bird instead. And it was a very special gift, and then along with that, a crystal. So I was very moved by that, and I sent them my books, because my friend over there had said they can read. So apparently they either read my books or just held them or thumbed through them, but they then decided to call me Water Woman. And that's their name for me. They call me Water Woman. And they sent me through my friends there. They gave a note where they wrote "For Water Woman." They printed it in English and wrapped it around this big rock that they sent me for communicating with them. And my friend who lives there mailed it to me. And I have it here in Hawaii. I use it all the time. It's better than a telephone. It's instantaneous. And now this is all new to me. You can imagine how I was reeling from all that I was learning. So I did then go there to meet with them in person. And they don't want to be seen. They don't want their pictures taken. And obviously for good reasons, because they are being hunted. People do want to shoot them, to kill them, to photograph them, and to study them, put them in a cage. So they have to keep very, very quiet and just live as they have been living for these thousands of years, mostly unseen. But I have noticed that lately they're allowing themselves to be seen more and more. But when I went there the first time, they did let me see them just once. And I guess they knew I kind of needed that, you know. So it was a situation where I was out in the woods. I was just relaxing. I had a tent there. And as I looked out, I could see one of them standing right there. It was very clear. They allowed me to see them. I looked a long time into the eyes, felt the warmth, felt the love, the gentleness coming through, recognized it because it was so similar to dolphins and whales, so universal. And I was like the fella in that movie. I was obsessed by that image of them to the point where I had to draw it. I had to try to draw it, and I'm not an artist, but I found a piece of paper towel and a magic marker, and I sat down, and as soon as I had a chance, and I just drew it. I wanted to get the feeling from the eyes. That was the main thing. And so they let me see them, just one at that time. And I found out later that one who showed herself to me was a female, about 6'5". She has beautiful, actually wavy hair. The hair on this particular family of the women, all the way down to their waist, from their head in the back, and their whole body's
wow.
hairy, but this wavy hair. And she is the medicine woman for the family. And it seems that the medicine women, or the women in general, oversee the families. They make decisions, and they're the ones apparently who made the decision that the members in the family of this group of ancient ones should not make themselves seen to people. And everyone abides by that. It's like a code of ethics among them. So they rarely will be seen. Now, I have been going back every 2 months, except in the winter. There's a period of time when it's just too cold there and I can't go. And they kind of go out of the area anyway during that time. And our friendship has continued. And at one point I asked them, well, you know, how can I help you? And what they communicated back to me telepathically, and they're experts at that, is that they feel that I could share with the world an understanding of who they are so that people will realize who they are and not try to hurt them and not try to ruin their environment, you know, to preserve the environment, again, preserve the earth, in doing so, and they felt that I could be like a speaker on their behalf. So I was very touched by that.
Joan, do the indigenous peoples in that area, do they have a longstanding legend of these families living there?
Well, that's what's so interesting. At first, I was so secretive about it because I thought I must be the only one who knows this, you know. But then, as I talked around, and especially with the First Nation people, with the, you know, American Indian people, many of them are well aware of the Sasquatch Nation. They're well aware of them. They have different names for them, Indian names, you know, the hairy ones of the forest and things such as that. But they do know, and they have also maintained mostly quietness about it. You know, they respect that the Sasquatch do not want to be brought out and on the stage, you know, out front. Not yet.
Yeah. So, do they stay in one place, or do they travel a lot? I mean, can they travel long distances?
Yes, you know, they have, of course, they're tall, and they have long legs, and they can actually keep up with a car. There's a number of reports saying that somebody would be driving along maybe 30, 40 miles an hour, and I'll use Sasquatch because most people know that term, would be running right alongside, just looking in the window at them as they were going, non-threatening, just looking, and they can keep up with them. So they can travel about 300 miles a day. And fences don't stop them. You know, like I think, well, there's all fences and barbed wire and all. Well, of course, they just step right over that.
Wow.
You know, so they're very
aware. Where do they live?
Of,
I mean, do they have huts? Do they live in trees? Where do they live?
No, not in trees very much. They live in the United States. I don't know the whole world, but they live in every state in the United States. They are everywhere. And
no way.
They can make places to sleep, like out of leaves and branches, and they can bend branches down, you know, the trees that are just saplings and things, they can bend and weave them together and make protective places like that. But apparently, something else that they've shared with me, they also have underground homes. And
uh-huh.
It's not caves. I've learned that it's not caves. They have taken me dream walking, as they call it. At first, all I noticed was I couldn't sleep at night. I'd be tossing and turning. And those would be the nights that the next day the medicine woman would say, you know, we went dream walking together. And I'd say, well, where did I go? And they'd say, well, you will remember what you learned there, but you won't remember being there. And I said, I want to remember being there. I want to remember.
Yeah. Right.
I got a little obstinate about it, and I said, I want to remember. So now they let me remember. At least they let me remember some that I remember, apparently. And at one point, we went into this place, and the way they did this is, like, I'm laying down in my sleeping bag, and then the Sasquatch come in, and we stand up, we go outside, and this whirlpool of energy comes around me and around them, each individual spiral, and we start to spiral. It spirals round and round and round around us from our feet up as the spiral goes, and all of a sudden we bilocate or appear in a different location from that spiraling energy. And what I saw there was, it was like a very round room that seemed to just have some kind of invisible lighting in the walls that would come out, almost like photosynthesis or something like that, that would light up and perhaps activated by our body heat. And that's where
wow.
they take me to meet with other members of the family and to discuss things. So, you know, being who I am, I always feel my job is kind of an educator and counselor and to learn myself and then share what I learn with other people. So I asked them, as we were together one time, I said, well, you know, I can bring people to meet with you if you'd like, and I would be very careful to just choose the correct people. And they said, well, you know, people are afraid of us. So the implication was they didn't think it would work, you know. So I said, well, you know, I bring people to swim with the dolphins. And then I out-pictured to them a picture of me and people swimming with the dolphins. And
yeah.
then they kind of went, mm-hmm, yeah. Well, then they said, but, you know, the dolphins are loved by your race, by your people, and they're about your size, they're small, and they have that smile, and they're playful. I don't think it's really the same thing. So I said, oh, yeah, that's true. So then I said, oh, I know. I take people to swim with the humpback whales. You know, they've got these barnacles all over them, protuberances, bumps. They're huge, and they're in a different environment than our own, and people go swim with them. And I pictured
yeah.
that out to them. And then it was so funny. It was like, it felt like they went, oh, yeah, well, that's pretty good. You know, you're getting the feelings, you know, and the feeling they're talking it over and communicating with each other. And so they seem to think that did make a difference. And so then I pictured to them, and this was over a couple of times of meeting with them, not all at once. I pictured myself sitting around the outdoor campfire that I have in the middle of the woods, and like with four or five people with me. And I said, here we are, now will you join us or not? Because I'm very careful. If I advertise something that I'm going to bring people an experience of, I want to make sure they're going to get it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Otherwise, it's just camping. Yeah, and I don't want to take chances with that. I want to be totally truthful. So when they received that, they sent back this lovely image of the same group of people sitting in a circle and with a Sasquatch between each person, each human person. And in that way, let me know that, yes, they would come and meet with us on their terms, though. Which means they don't want to be seen, and yet they will make their presence known.
How big is the total community? If they can travel that far, we're not talking about an endangered species of only 33 individuals on the whole Earth, right?
There's thousands, you say, live
in every state.
Oh, yeah, and you know, there's things like the Yeti and the Yowie in Australia and the Abominable Snowman. They've been given all these terrible names, a lot of them, you know. I mean, Bigfoot, you know, they don't have big feet. Their feet are normal size. But anyway, that's all the same. That's all part of them, you see.
I know some teenagers that have big feet.
Their shoes are like gunboats.
They're not like tennis shoes. Do they have structured families, right? They've got an organized social unit.
Yes, that's right. And the young ones in this particular group are learning English. And, you know, they showed me on a blackboard. Now, the beaver tail, he's just 7 years old. He's the brother, the younger brother of the medicine woman. And he's learned to write, you know. And they tend to write mostly consonants and don't always put the vowels in. And then they'll do pictures, you know, and it's sweet. Like, they'll do a picture of me. They'll make, like, water. They make a wavy line that looks like water. And then they make a woman that looks kind of like a Sasquatch woman. The Sasquatch women have very large breasts, you know. So I become very buxom in their pictures of me, their little drawing they make, you know. anyway, I know this all sounds phenomenal, but believe me, it's been 2 years for me, and I'm still amazed by what I am learning and wondering, where have I been all my life that I never knew about this before? So they send notes. I will write to them and ask questions. And the way I do that is I have a notepad, and I write in it with a magic marker, and usually I print. And then when I ask a question, I leave space underneath that so they can answer right there. I leave the pen there. And then I write the next question and leave space. And then, you know, they answer it right away or the next day or the next week, but usually they always will answer it eventually. And I'm there to find it, that when I wake up the next morning, there it is. The answers have been written in. And it's interesting sometimes because I think what I'm learning is they have to materialize in order to write with the pen, which makes sense, you know, in order to answer me. So on some occasions, they've been, I leave it in this little cabin in the woods, and they've been in there because they can go right inside, you know, just materialize inside the cabin. And they've been in the middle of answering a note when somebody starts to walk in the door of the cabin, and boom, they disappear. So I have some of their notes that, like, in mid-sentence, they stopped writing all of a sudden.
Wow.
So in these
now,
ways,
do you,
I'm learning.
I have so many questions and so little time, only about 30 minutes left. And I want to ask, I know they're learning English, but evidently they can speak and they can form words, but do they have a spoken language? I know they communicate telepathically, but do they have a spoken language, and have you heard it?
Yes, I have, and it is very different. The one I've heard, and again, they use infrasound and ultrasound, so they can make sounds beyond our ability to hear, but the Sasquatch, and I think it's a little different from the ancient ones, they have a sound of a lot of, like, growling. We're going to go together. We'll go over there. You know, it sounds like that, and it can, you know, I always have to tell people it can be scary, and you're not allowed to bolt and run. You know, you have to stay in your chair around the fire and be there. And, of course, now there are many recordings of their sounds. Other people have recorded it. So it's nice to be able to play those. I don't play them at first. I let people hear it firsthand themselves. And then later I play samples of it because it's such an interesting phenomena. It shows how the human race is in that the minute something happens, you want to rationalize it. So you go, okay, what is that? It must be a mountain lion, you know. It must be two raccoons having a fight. You always rationalize it. And then you have to, they'll do something to show what you're rationalizing is not true. I had an experience.
Well, I know my feeling is that you at first went into this area, maybe not as a skeptic, but certainly not sold on the idea that you were actually going to come in contact with Sasquatch, and you have, you know, great experience in nature with intelligent beings, so you would know what the difference is between, you know, an intelligent intention along with a telepathic message as opposed to two rodents fighting in the dark.
Yes, yes. And yet I really respect that people want proof, you know, and I want them to have that proof. And the medicine woman understands that too, and her family does. Now, the elder, she has a boyfriend. His name is Tishoma, and his father is named Pushoma. Now, Pushoma seems to be the elder of the group, and he will write to me. When he writes, it's all symbols. He doesn't know English, or at least he doesn't choose to write in English. He makes symbols, and then I've put that out to some of the indigenous people, asking them if they can help me interpret it. Now, it's very interesting because there's a whole language I've learned about called Ogham. That's a stick language. Now, the medicine woman said to me, I will take you to the place where there is stick writing. It's what you call Ogham. So, again, they have a name for things. The human race has a different name for it, but they're talking about some of the same things. So, you know, they...
Is it like Sumerian? You think it's similar to Sumerian?
The Ogham, it's very interesting. You'll have, like, a line on a piece of paper, a straight line going left to right. And then
right.
Up from that line, there'll be some, you know, lines intersecting it. It's just lines. So they'll have one line or four lines together or two, and then some lines coming down from the central line. And each of those combinations is a letter. We've translated, people who study Ogham have translated it into the English language. It's all consonants. So it's still a bit of a mystery. So, like, one line, I don't have the chart right here in front of me now, but it's on the Internet. Anyone could look up Ogham and see what it looks like. There was a wonderful man who has passed on now who wrote extensively about and understood the significance of it. Because at first it just looks like a lot of lines. The lines also, each line represents a type of tree. The Sasquatch are very, very connected to nature and in contact with it. And they know the significance of trees and the different quality of each tree. And they will use those qualities in writing to you to tell you something about yourself, you know, flexible like the willow or something, you know. So I'm just learning about this, so I'm sorry I can't give you more clear details than that. But they've taken me to the place where they did this writing on rocks. And they've shown me the writing. And it's interesting because some of these places, people have come across it. You know, archaeologists have found these places. And some of these places are said that they are of an ancient people, and it must be Native Americans who are doing it. And then to further confuse everyone, some of the writing looks a lot like the runes. You know, runes? From Scandinavia.
Yeah. Right.
And some of the writing is that. Well, as it turns out, and some of your listeners may be well aware of this, the Vikings were in North America. They actually came along the coastline of the United States, all the way down Florida, up the Gulf of Mexico, and actually went up the Mississippi River. So now more and more of that history is being revealed. So what what I'm being shown by this wonderful group of Sasquatch people, the ancient ones, is that our history involves so much more than we ever knew. It, of course, it's all things that happened before Columbus. There were millions of people on our continent before Columbus ever arrived, and they were a peaceful people. So I feel like this is a bit overwhelming, but there is so much they're taking me to see. And they've taken me to the place where their bones are. They told me ahead they were going to do that. I was just in disbelief because, of course, people who don't believe in Sasquatch or don't want to say, well, where are the bones? We don't ever see any of their bones, so they couldn't exist. Well, the Sasquatch
right.
have told me. They told me that they take the body and the bones when they pass on out of this reality. They take them to the third world. That's kind of the term that the Native American people use, the third world. But they said there were some on laying on the land that I could see. And they took me there, and I saw them, and I have them on my website. They are like 7'5" skeletons at a time when the native people were about 5'2" to 5'4" tall.
Huh.
So
now you say that at one time they were very advanced before the last ice age. It's been a long time since then, and they're intelligent. They have social order, and they probably delegate tasks throughout their community just like any social order would. Why have they let you know why they have chosen to stay post-technological? Why they have not, because obviously before Columbus's time as well after the Ice Age, and there were not many people living here on this continent, and they certainly could have formed a technological society not unlike that they had known before. Why did they choose to just live off nature in small family units and be underground?
Well, like the dolphins, they know that that's the better way of life. You know, really. They know that they have everything they need. They're provided for. They're safe. They're warm. They're close. They have the love of their family. It's a beautiful life, and one that I'm moving into more and more, simple and pure in a lot of ways. And the dolphins
right.
are such examples of that, you know. Who wants technology? I don't.
Well, you look at humans, you know, human beings could not have evolved here. We're just not built for it. We don't have enough body hair. We don't have enough body fat. Our bones are too weak. We don't have natural defenses against disease. We can't stand UV radiation. You know, we just didn't evolve here. We're transplants. The beings that you're talking about are built for Earth. They have body hair. They can stand the gravity. They can move long distances. They can eat things from nature without food preparation. They're built for this planet. So it seems
exactly.
like, you know, they're the natives. And we are the ETs, if you really want to get down to it.
Right.
So.
And they do have contact with the star people. And that's another part of it. You know, they're not, like I said, living in caves. They're living very well. And they are interacting with the star people and with that type of technology. Kind of like Chewbacca.
Well, yeah.
They didn't say that. I did.
I can imitate that sound. But, you know, well, there's at least one talk radio host that I know of who has training in physics that would love to go along with you sometime and experience
mm-hmm.
this. So we'll have to
okay.
get together off the air and make plans. So you do have at least pictures or samples of bones. You have hair, I suppose, and footprints mm-hmm. on your website, right?
Yes, that's right. And they have allowed me to have one picture of them that I didn't take, actually. My dear friend, that couple who live on the edge of the woods there, they actually increase the size of their garden and make sure that the Sasquatch have plenty of food to eat, freely eat from their garden. And every
right.
holiday, like Christmas, Thanksgiving, Easter, they make huge dinners and put them out on this picnic table they have in the woods and leave it for the family there. At first, the Sasquatch took the coolers and everything, and then my friend drew a picture of the cooler, and then they knew, oh, okay, we bring that part back, and now she leaves, like, plastic bags for leftovers and things like that. But they have an ongoing relationship, and I forget what I was starting to talk about. I got off on my friends there, but, yes, they are... very advanced.
Well, I was asking you about the samples, things that...
the samples, yes. And so they let them have a picture. They have a picture that my friend so kindly let me have, and it's on my website, of one. And the full length and then a close-up of the head. And really what you see is a lot of hair mostly, you know. But that is an authentic picture. And then there's the one that I drew, which looks very different because I'm not an artist. But you can see the eyes in there. So, yes, I have to keep this quite private, and it's not something for everyone. This is the first group that went out. I went with five. It happened to be women. But there are people who have worked with shamans and who are used to camping, who can really rough it, can be in the woods day and night, and are totally happy to just sit quietly and listen to see what sounds are going to be made. They make a lot of sounds. They can project their voice into different parts of the woods. They can make sounds of like sticks clapping together. One night when there was this loud crashing sound, they'll do crashing sounds sometimes. It's almost like a class in Fear 101 or Overcoming Fear, I think. Before you can meet with them, you have to first be able to be okay with all of this. So this crashing sound in the woods, I thought, whoa, what's that? So rational mind kicks in. Okay, a branch must have fallen off a tree, and it must have had like a raccoon on it or something, because after this crashing noise, there was a thump, 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 thump. You know, so I thought, oh, so the branch fell down, the raccoon fell on the ground, and it went running away, and that's what I heard. So then, right after I made that decision rationally, they made the identical sound happen two more times. I said, okay, there can't be three raccoons all falling off the branch and all running. No, they let you know that they're making these sounds and that they're there. So in addition to writing, they bring gifts of rocks for the people. They take something they love that I bring is chocolate-covered macadamia nuts.
Uh-huh.
They love that. Some of the gifts people bring, they don't take. They just leave them sitting there. They don't really like store-bought things too much. But they do like a Kona coffee beans and the macadamia nuts. So
do you
they
have
leave
a feeling,
mine.
Do you have a feeling where they came from? Or did they evolve here on this earth, or did they come from another planet as well?
Well, in translating the symbols from Pushoma and doing my best, it seems one of the symbols is about point of origin. And
right.
He did that symbol. And then if you look on my website, you can see right after it, he did a drawing of what can only be Orion's belt. He did the three stars of Orion and then continued to put in the other stars in that constellation in a drawing to me. And during that entire week, Orion was over us. And it was in March, and again in May, Orion was still over us, which makes me wonder, now how's that happening? But they have been really showing me information about Orion. Now, I don't know a lot about Orion, of course. I know where it is. I can see it in the sky, that aspect of it, but I don't know much about the beings who live there. So it may mean that they originated there because, you know, that's the question people always say, where did you come from? You know,
sure.
And they
sure.
really try to answer. They really are. They're so honest and so loving. They would never hurt anyone. If anyone comes into their territory or shoots their children, they make a terrible odor in the area that's so strong it can burn your nostrils. They never did that with me, but evidently they can do that to make people leave, and it works. So that's the way that it's not harmful.
Sort of like people repellent.
Yeah.
Now, you say they can dimensionally travel. Do they, you know, I'm wondering why they come to this dimension at all. If there's so much danger and they have to stay in hiding, why don't they stay in the other dimension where they would be safe, where they wouldn't have a danger of being killed or captured?
Well, from what I understand, they live on this planet, really, the most, and they can go into the other dimension. But my understanding from things they've said is that if they stay in the other dimension too long, then they wouldn't be able to come back into the physical again. So they can just take short times in the other. Because it was interesting, I asked them to come to Hawaii. I said, well, you know, here, I'm writing you a note here, and I'm leaving it here, you know, in my office in Hawaii. Would you please answer it? And nothing happened. Weeks passed, and the note's sitting there. So I picked up the rock that the medicine woman gave me, and I'm holding it in the way she told me, and I'm communicating. You know, dear one, you know, I've left a note. Would you please answer it? It's over here, and you know, and to see what would happen. And so she writes. It's interesting because I communicate now telepathically. She writes to me, you know, so she uses my way. I use her way. And she wrote a note that she left in the woods over on the mainland, and my friend mailed it to me. And it said, Water Woman wants us, because they speak we and us, not I, you know, they're like the ETs do, wants us to come to place where sun go down to see her. We cannot come to that place. Too far, they wrote. And I just had a picture of them trying to swim across the Pacific Ocean or something, you know. And it just made me laugh, you know. And that's on the website where they put that. And so that's, you know, another little piece of information I got then about, okay, it looks like that would be too far for them to dematerialize, come over here, and materialize and go back there. Somehow they can't do that. I think, though, that they can access ships, and that's a whole other subject, you know. So,
do they know about the activities of humans on the Earth, like war and selfishness and all that? I mean, I know they live in remote areas.
Yeah.
But I guess they're very conscious.
They said Third World War will come. We be safe in woods. That's what they said.
Are they monogamous? Yeah. Do they mate for life?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And usually they only have one child, maybe two children is all. They just restrict the number of children they have.
Sure. Just enough for the environment to support.
Yes.
So they don't experience urban sprawl like we do.
No, I don't think so. But their environment is being infringed upon. You know, they're having less and less space to gather their food and to feel safe. Like where I go, hunting season starts November 1st, you know. And so they leave that area. They really know a lot about herbs, you know, and healing. My friend over there has become ill, and they've been giving him herbs, and what they do is they leave it on their kitchen table at night, you know, when everyone's sleeping. They leave it there with a little note saying, boil three times. Because some of these herbs actually are poisonous things, you know, that you wouldn't want to take. But if you boil it three times, apparently all the poison comes out, and then instead it becomes a healing herb. So they do that. They take care of animals. They bring animals who are hurt to my friend, to their house there, to let them take care of them. They've accumulated a lot of animals now, like cats and dogs and ducks and things. And they're very caring. And in that area, many, many people have had contact with them and know they're real. And just like, you know, with our star friends, people are reluctant to talk about it. And, you know, what do I care? At this point in my life, I'm just going to tell the truth of what's going on out there.
Yeah, and I think, you know, maybe that's why you've been chosen, because of your life's work and your ability to, you know, you've changed the course of history, Joan. You've introduced human beings to another sentient race on our planet. You've changed my life, and you've changed other people's lives, because thousands, maybe millions of people have now learned that there's another being living in the sea that you cannot kill because it is a sentient being. And now here's another sentient being that we just cannot kill for sport. I mean, you know, I don't need to bring back a stuffed Hoosier so Kentuckians will know what they look like. We just assume that Hoosiers are somewhat intelligent. So, why are hunters after these species? Why can't we just say this is another occupant of our planet that deserves to live in peace?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. That's so important. And that's what I would really like to see ultimately, that they would be protected and that it would be against the law to shoot them. That has to happen, sooner the better. I'm working with someone in Canada who's doing that, and they're having good results in Canada in getting something like that put into law. So, yeah.
Well, what are your plans to further your research besides taking a not so risky trip to the North Pole the summer of 2008?
Well, I'm going to continue to interact with them. I go, again in July, again in the fall, then I have to wait through the winter, because they keep giving me more information, and it's an amazing course of study, because it's like when I'm ready. And I have to admit, the first time I met them, I mean, things materialized in midair, and, I've never been, to the gurus. I hadn't seen that before. Some people have seen it, but that was the first for me. And they would make things like suddenly fall out of the sky right in front of you. And so that whole time I was with them, I was like trying to deal with this whole new reality. Now I'm a lot more used to it, and I can, understand when other people question it or go through a fear around some of it. And I think it's so important, because kind of like, I was in Sedona giving a talk about orbs. It's like the orbs now, they're showing up in the pictures, and people can't deny them. There is something there. They're living entities. They're interacting with us in many ways, in all different settings, and we have to acknowledge they're there. And I think it's so important that we move beyond thinking physical matter is all there is. I mean, matter is so little a part of the universe,
Oh, it is. It only makes up less than 5% of the universe. Physicists know this. We look out in the universe and can, look at planets and stars and things. That's only 5% of the universe. The rest of the mass of the universe is undetectable by our instruments, but we see the perturbation of their gravity footprint holding the rest of the universe together. We just can't see it. We just don't have instruments to detect it. It's a very neat paradox, and physics community is rather embarrassed by it, that we just can't detect it, but we know it's there. Someone's on the end of the string holding the rock up above the ground. We just can't see who's holding the string. I was looking. We have kind of an encyclopedia we call Gravitation. It's a big black book. It's a couple thousand, it's about 1,500 pages. And it's got everything that's ever been written about physics and space and everything in it, kind of a compilation. And somewhere around page 760, there's a picture of the balloon universe being blown up, with the galaxies like pennies glued on the surface of the balloon. And as the balloon expands, the galaxies move further and further apart. And they're using this model to explain the expanding universe. But they don't explain who the guy is that's blowing up the universe. That's where physics is right now. Here's our Bible.
I know exactly what you mean. I mean, it's just amazing. And we've got to step outside of that, I know you have to deal with this, too. It's like you can't, if you step too far, you'll lose the people. You've got to take it little by little, just as I learned little by little, So, there's something happening I don't share with people. I haven't even put it on my website yet, but the time will come I will, because first accept that this race of people exists all over the world, is aware of us, can read our minds, know what we're doing, know what we're thinking, is watching us, watching over us, and then next begin to see all their abilities, as the dolphins have, and realize we can do all those things ourselves. We can do those things. We can dematerialize. We can teleport things. We can become invisible when we want to,
Yeah. Not unlike what one of our master teachers in the Bible tried to tell us the very same thing. If he would just stop and listen and quit trying to build religions and churches and just listen to who we are and what we can be.
Right.
Well, it has been... This has been an amazing program. I can't believe 3 hours have gone by again. Is there anything that you want us to know that you're doing that's coming up? I'm giving a workshop in at Mount Shasta. I'm going to be at James Gilliland's place up the second week, actually the first week in July, first weekend in July, right after July 4th. And my good friend Mikhail Ledwith is going to be there, and he's one of the most fantastic orb photographers on the planet, bar none. I've seen some amazing work by this guy on orbs. Just fantastic work, unbelievable. I think he's one of the pioneers in the world, and I watched him demonstrate orbs coming into a picture and then leaving by his intention, standing out in a field at night with a camera flashing automatically on a tripod. It was phenomenal, just phenomenal.
Yes, I completely agree. Mm-hmm. That's what
they
do.
I just got back from Tibet, and in Tibet I filmed glass ornaments hanging from fishing line around the Maitreya, which is the future Buddha. And in trying to get the monks to explain to me why they had glass ornaments hanging from the ceiling in this unpattern out there, gold ones and green ones and white ones and silver ones, different sizes, what I got from them is they wanted the pilgrims to understand that these were orbs. These were the ascended masters that were here. And they hung them from the ceiling so the dimensionally blind would know that the ascended masters were there.
That's beautiful. That is so wonderful. You know, you have a minute? We don't have a minute, I guess, huh?
Yeah, we do. We have about 4 or 5 minutes.
Okay. When the ancient ones took me to see their bones, you know, I was so excited. I got out my camera. I took a picture. And then right after, I said, oh, you know, what's wrong with me? How rude, you know. So I put the camera aside, and I said a blessing, and I thanked the bones of the ancient ones for being there and for the race of people that had come from them and for my ability to be with them and learn from them, and said all this stuff. And then I got, you know, permission to take a picture, and when I did, at that point there were so many orbs. So I have the before picture where they weren't there, and then when the blessings are said and when you kind of call upon the spirit of those bones, all the orbs were there. It was great. So
yeah,
anyway,
wow.
I'd like to mention, if I could, just
sure.
I have a seminar coming up that's called Dolphins and Andromedans, but that's already next week, and that's incredible, week long. And then also in September, I do an entire week on sound healing and how we can be healed and heal others through the sounds of the dolphins, with a sound expert coming in from Europe to co-facilitate with me. And also in September, another seminar called Introduction to Dolphins. So I encourage people to contact me and learn firsthand from the dolphins themselves and the whales. My whale trips are all filled, so there's no until 2008, there's no openings on those. But I look forward to hearing from everyone. My phone number, can you give phone numbers?
Sure, sure.
Yeah, okay, my phone number in Hawaii is 808-323-8000, Monday to Friday. So I just wanted to mention that, and if you'd like to be on the mailing list, send us your address, and I hope you will read my books, and I have CDs and DVDs out, and oh, I'm having so much fun. So I'd love to meet you all of you out
what
there.
What a life. What a great way to live and to be alive. Joan, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the program. I can see us working together, no doubt about it. You've been amazing. I appreciate you coming on the program. You've just been
thank you so much, Brooks. Thanks for all that you do to educate people. It's so helpful. I really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm trying. I'm nowhere near your accomplishments, but I sincerely appreciate you.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for being on the program. We'll talk to you later.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, bye-bye. All right, there you have it. My fans all over the world, listeners, that was Joan Ocean, probably one of the best in the world at what she does, and we appreciate her being here with us, and we're playing our exit. It has been our pleasure to have you here this evening.
Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we try to provide the best 3 hours of talk radio on Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours where you live, send the call letters of your local radio station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, who you are. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Be aware that every life is immensely valuable. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio saying, peace.